can't come true.
Welcome to A New Way to Handle Absolutely Everything with your host, Elise Coit.
And good morning, Seattle and the West Coast. Hi, everyone. And to everyone listening on the podcast and around the world, thank you so much. I am so happy to be back live. Last week was great to talk to Peter Fenner. And, of course, we pre-recorded the show and then I was in New York. So just... it is a little different when I'm with you live, and I'm really looking forward to being here today. So how are you guys? Feeling happy for Friday? How's the job? How's the things you care about? And the people you love? And how do you know how they're feeling, the people you love? How are they feeling about their day, their Friday, their lives, their jobs? Not always sure, are we? Sometimes we know. And I think that's normal. I think it's normal not, or at least it's become so, hasn't it, to not know how another person is experiencing their life, even if they're very close to us. And maybe it's become even more normal to feel even less connected to and sure about how, say, someone working in a sweatshop in China or in the Philippines might feel about their life and their job, or a mergers and acquisitions lawyer. But what if we did? What if we did want to feel that connection, know a little bit more about that? Would that enhance our lives? Today, that's what we're going to talk about. We'll talk about a radical art of living called empathy. And I'm going to suggest that this can be pretty essential to life. And I also want to say that empathy has about as much to do with being nice to people as navel gazing has to do with oranges. So empathy is actually an integral part of all our lives, whether we're doing it or not. And you can tell, I think, when it's a big part of your life because it really connects you to a feeling of living into other people. And that's something that my guest today, Roman Krasnarek, knows a heck of a lot about. I've been looking forward to this show for weeks. I mean, Roman refers to empathy as the ultimate way of traveling. So pack a bag, folks, and here we go. This is going to be a great show. Let me tell you a little bit about Roman before I introduce you to him. He is a founding faculty member of the School of Life. And if you don't know the School of Life in London, please go check that out. It is quite an extraordinary place, all about the inspiration and instruction, if you like, for the art of living. If you go to my website, elisecoit.com, you can see I've put up for a couple weeks now a TED video of Alain de Botton, who I'm also a big fan of, and who is one of the if he's a mentor or ambassador, I think he's called, for the School of Life. So you'll want to check out the School of Life. And Roman co-designed and teaches many of the school's courses on work and politics and love. And he is the resident expert on empathy there. He's also a writer, a teacher, a thinker, and was named by The Observer in the UK as one of Britain's lifestyle gurus for 2010. And I have his book manuscript here. Lucky me. You'll have his book later this year. And until then, you can read his excellent blog called Outrospection. It's on outrospection.org. That's outrospection.org. And I'll give you that many times during the show, and of course you can find it on my site. I'll be sure you're linked up to that. So, all right. Well, who wouldn't want to talk to a guy who wants to start the world's first empathy museum? So let's welcome Roman to the show. Hi, Roman Krasnarek. Thank you so much for being here.
I'm glad to be here as well, Elise.
Yeah, I really have been looking forward to this show. I discovered your blog, I'm sure through the School of Life, and wrote to you and asked you to come on the show. And it's just been a pleasure to discover that you have all this work in the wings. And so for those listening today, you know, keep in touch with Roman through his blog and through the School of Life, because there's an awful lot going on there that's of value. So empathy, I mean, that's the book title, Other People's Shoes, Why Empathy Matters for the Art of Living. I mean, Roman, why does empathy matter?
Well, I think empathy is something that we all experience in our daily lives. We imagine ourselves being in other people's shoes. For example, you know, if you're at work one day, there may be somebody new in the office, but you don't ask them to give the presentation to the boss on their first day because you step into their shoes and realize they might be nervous about that. And equally, we experience the empathetic desert of daily life, the empathy deficits that, again, you might be at work and your boss is hassling you about a deadline you're not meeting without taking into account that you're going through big problems in your personal life, a messy divorce, your mother's got Alzheimer's, you're looking after her, whatever. So empathy is part of our everyday lives, but it has a huge role potentially in the art of living and in developing a personal philosophy of life. And a lot of my work has been about working out how and trying to think through how empathy can make your life more fulfilling and more adventurous.
Mm. I love that idea of the adventure into empathy because you really do that. I mean, and you talk about a lot of people who have. Before we go into the adventure of empathy, shall we just be a little clearer about what you mean by empathy, what it is and what it's not? I think that might be helpful.
Absolutely. I mean, if you pick up a standard college psychology textbook, you'll find two different definitions of empathy in it usually. The first kind that you'll find is a definition for what's called affective empathy, or sometimes called empathy as a shared emotional response. Mm. And what that means is that if you see, for example, a baby crying in anguish, and you too feel anguish, that same emotion, then you're mirroring their emotions. You're experiencing affective empathy. It's very different from the term sympathy. If you saw that baby again in anguish and you felt a different emotion like pity, you'd be experiencing sympathy. Sympathy is an emotional response which is different. Mm. That's one kind of empathy, that affective or shared emotional response. But again, if you look back at your psychology textbook, you'll see another kind of empathy called cognitive empathy or perspective-taking empathy. And that's the one I'm interested in. And the definition of that kind of empathy, I think of it as the imaginative act of stepping into the shoes of another person and seeing the world from their perspective. It's about understanding where another person is coming from in terms of their most important values and beliefs and experiences and thoughts and fears, about understanding their worldview. So those examples I just gave in the office situation of that kind where you step into somebody else's shoes or someone fails to step into yours, that's all about cognitive empathy. So when I talk about empathy, that's the kind of empathy I'm normally speaking about. And I think it's important because it's the one kind that you can really develop, this ability to look through the eyes of other people. But it's very important. Sorry, go on.
Well, I was just thinking that the empathy that you're talking about leaves me free to act and, in fact, wanting to be active. The other kind of empathy, which is the effective empathy or affective empathy, especially when it's about really falling into pity and sympathy, is more about me getting upset and getting identified with what's going on. And I feel less inclined to feel a little bit more crumpled in that case, you know, sort of like, now let's both sit on the floor and cry. And I was interested in what came up for me as you were talking, you know, how, and you actually talk about that in the book, that a lot of action has happened on the back of cognitive empathy, taking the perspective of other people. And we'll get to that too.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, of course, the two kinds of empathy are related to each other. So if you look through the eyes of a homeless person on the street that you're passing by and try to understand how they're experiencing life, what fears they may have, what thoughts they may have, equally that can help you develop an emotional attachment to them, an effective, empathetic response. But, you know, like you, I sometimes feel that when we get very enmeshed in the emotional turmoil of another person, in some ways it can be disempowering or can prevent us from acting. And that the adventure of empathy, I think, is being able to put yourself in the shoes of people who you may not even have any strong feeling for, you know, people who are very different from you. So, for example, someone who is, you mentioned a mergers and acquisition lawyer, you know, that might be a case of really interesting person to look through their eyes and see how you personally respond. As you say, you're free to act in that way.
Yeah. This I love this idea that this is an adventure, you know, that it's a form of travel. You developed that quite a lot in the book, all the way to the idea of, you know, sort of having a museum where you'd go and do all kinds of things. And I want to talk about that. But for you have actually done a lot of empathetic traveling that involves some physical traveling, too. And I'd love to talk about that. But how did you discover that you even wanted to get involved in that? What was it? How did it start for you, this empathetic travel?
Well, the first way empathy started for me is when I left college and I was working in telephone sales. Mm. And I was experiencing there, an absolutely a job which I found horrible, really. I used to feel nervous and sick before I used to go in, and then we'd be cold calling people around the country, trying to sell them children's encyclopedias or taxation journals, and I had people shouting at me all the time at the other end. And now, of course, when you or I receive a telephone call from a stranger trying to sell us a new window frame or something, normally we put down the phone, get off the phone as quickly as possible. But what I learned from my experience, that travel into someone else's life, the telephone salesperson in my case, was try and be more compassionate, to imagine myself in their shoes, to know that they probably don't want to do the job, they don't want to annoy us on purpose, but they're just trying to get by in their own life. And that experience made me see that it's actually quite powerful on the very personal level, being able to experience somebody else's life and make that connection with them. But that was only the beginning of my empathetic travels. The more extreme ones happened in my mid-20s, when I first went to work with refugees in Guatemala, just south of the border with Mexico. And as many of your listeners will know, there had been civil war in Guatemala since the 1960s. And when I was there in the 1990s, the war was just dying down. It was just ending. And refugees had been in camps in Mexico sometimes for 10 years, were just coming back to their old lands to sow the soil and grow corn and beans. And they were asking for international human rights observers to live in their villages as a protection against the Guatemalan army, who'd been responsible for horrendous massacres, for genocide of the indigenous Mayan population in the 80s. And so I went there for several months, living in a village and living with the poorest people I've ever met in my life. And every night I would go and eat with a different family or have lunch with a different family. And when you're fed a meal by the poorest people you've ever met, and they give it to you gratefully, you never forget that, and you see another way of living. The struggles just to get food, just to get water, just to maintain basic health. I was in a community where children were dying of malnutrition, and I was as I said in my 20s, and that made a big impression on me that poverty really has a human face. I mean, we look in the newspapers or on a newspaper website, and we see a lot of statistics or photographs, but when you have experience etched on your skin, that really catapults you into a different way of looking at the world. And I've never been able to forget that empathetic experience of getting just a small taste of what it's like to live born in a developing country. I don't pretend that I'm an expert, because again, I could dip in and dip out of their lives, but it certainly made an unforgettable impression on me. And what I learned from that is that one of the most powerful ways to develop empathy is through experience, through, as I said, having it etched on your skin in a way that you don't forget, to really walk in someone else's moccasins.
Yeah, I mean, we were being in New York last week. I was noticing this a lot and talking about this with somebody. I think it was actually a waiter that we befriended, and really, you notice that those of us who tip, or a lot of times the people who tip and are really nice to wait staff, are those who've had that experience. Or, for example, my daughter, who's making her living waiting tables right now. And so I every time I go anywhere, I think, okay, well, this is really, I'm aware of how small, how tiny her paycheck actually is if people don't tip. And it's, because I hear when she gets to the end of the month, right, and it's hard. So, you do become, you gave the telemarketer, you do take on other behaviors in your own life when you're willing to take in an experience of someone else's
That's right.
Life.
Yeah, and that's why for the last 300 years, philosophers have said that empathy is one of the cornerstones of being a moral or ethical person, you know, being someone who's compassionate towards the waitstaff at the diner that you're in New York. I mean, in the 18th century, the Scottish thinker Adam Smith wrote a book called The Theory of Moral Sentiments. And he's more famous for a book called The Wealth of Nations, which everyone, you know, sees as a cornerstone of capitalist exploitation, or that's how I see it. But he actually wrote a rather lovely book 17 years earlier, The Theory of Moral Sentiments, where he said that our fellow feeling for the misery of others is due to our imaginative capacity to change places in fantasy with the sufferer. And what he meant was that we could step into someone else's shoes through having maybe been a waiter ourselves or a waitress ourselves, and that is what propels us into compassionate action. And 250 years later, the British novelist Ian McEwan said something similar. He said, imagining what it's like to be someone other than yourself is at the core of our humanity. It's the essence of compassion. It's the beginning of morality. And that's why I see that empathy can be a moral guide that you can really, as you're giving in those examples, bring into your own life. You can see it with your daughter. You can see it in a restaurant. You can put it into practice. And that is a wonderful thing, to take your principles and put them into reality, to make them into a daily practice.
And we'll talk about that. We'll have a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk more about putting empathy into practice and some of the because you have in the book quite a few examples of how historically that's happened. And I was fascinated and very moved by those. So when we come back from the break, we'll talk a little bit more about empathy into action. And I'm privileged to be speaking with Roman Krasnarek today. And you can find Roman on his blog, outrospection.org. I'll give you that again after the break. We'll see you in just a moment.
If you love the show, did you know that you can make a donation to support it? You can do that at www.elisecoit.com. That's elisecoit.com. Or from Elise's host page. Just click on the live player. And there are so many ways to contribute to the web of life. You can let someone go in front of you in line today, or simply donate a smile with all the warmth in your heart. Every day is full of choices and chances to be a positive force with others who share this planet with us. Elise loves and appreciates you, and thanks you for being here and for being that positive force. Namaste.
Don't you suspect there's more to you? That joy is just waiting for you to decide and take one step? That you can? About the ways you would like to shine. See ElisecoIt.com. That's ElisecoIt.com, where you will see her invitation to personally connect, get coaching and support at ElisecoIt.com.
Is your chance to be part of the show. Call 877-230-3062. Call in with your questions or thoughts and talk with the host and their guest. Again, that number is 877-230-3062.
Eckhart Tolle called it a great blessing for our planet. The work is a way to understand what's hurting you and to address your problems with clarity. Created by Byron Katie,
The work is a simple, powerful process of inquiry that teaches you to identify and question thoughts that cause suffering. Learn to use inquiry and watch videos of people doing the work on www.thework.com. Information on trainings, including the transformative 9-day school, and all the support you need are waiting for you on thework.com. That's thework.com.
Welcome back. I'm talking to Roman Krasnarek today from London's School of Life, and we're talking about empathy. And just before the break, we were looking at how empathy is a moral guide and how it also informs the way we live our lives, the way we are with others, and how we put empathy into practice in our lives has a lot to do with the depth of our relationships and our connections to other people. And welcome back, Roman. I just wanted to talk with you a little bit more for readers who don't have your book yet. When's it coming out? End of the year?
It'll be out towards the end of the year, yeah.
Great.
Other People's Shoes.
Yeah, Other People's Shoes, Why Empathy Matters for the Art of Living. And until then, just in case you didn't get the blog, it's outrospection.org. And you'll find Roman blogging on that quite regularly, actually, and I think you're going to enjoy what he writes. But Roman, you did quite an interesting study of not only great empathists in history, but also some of the social movements that were I don't think I've ever looked at the abolishment of the slave trade or the things that some of the historical things that you looked at in the book from an empathetic point of view. Do you want to talk about the abolition of the slave trade and the role of empathy? Because I just was so I was so moved by the way you looked at that from this perspective that you took about that. What stands out for you about that? Go ahead.
Well, the way we normally talk about empathy, which we've been talking about for the last 20 minutes or so, is on the level of the individual. But I also think that empathy is a radical force for social change, that empathy has the power to shift the contours of history. And indeed, I think there are fantastic examples of that happening. Empathy is a force, I think, for a revolution of human relationships. We normally think of social change happening through new laws or political parties, new institutions, but actually I think change happens through the way people treat each other on an individual level. And when that changes on a mass scale, on a collective scale, then that's when we see the historical shifts. And one of the great ones that occurred in the past is in the late 18th century Britain, which is the rise of the mass movement against slavery and the slave trade. It was an empathy-powered movement. It was the world's first mass human rights movement. So in the 1780s in Britain, and also in other parts of the world like the US, slavery was an accepted part of social life. People thought it was totally normal and justifiable. Britain in the 1780s was presiding over the international slave trade. It also had colonies in the West Indies where they were working to death 500,000 slaves on sugar plantations. And as I said, this was an accepted state of affairs. But in the 1780s arose a mass movement led by some Quakers, an important Anglican deacon called Thomas Clarkson, that mobilized people using empathy. What they did is they got the British public to understand what it was really like to be a slave working on those sugar plantations by publishing first-hand accounts, by going on tours around British town halls, showing the chains on people's on wrists, or the mouth implements, torture implements used to chain their necks or keep their mouths open to be fed. They published posters showing how many slaves were squeezed onto a slave ship and accounts of slaves being thrown overboard, and they really brought to life what the sugar in their tea really meant in reality. It meant slavery, and it meant death. And this was an important way of getting people to actually take social action. That there were huge town hall meetings that followed that. There were boycotts of sugar. There were parliamentary petitions. Tens of thousands of people rose up against slavery. It's a fantastic story documented by the American social thinker and historian Adam Hochschild in his book Bury the Chains, which I recommend hugely, documented elsewhere, of course. But he really shows how empathy was the driving force of this mass movement, and eventually they were able to abolish the slave trade and then slavery itself. And it's one of the great examples of a flowering of empathy on a mass scale, and that's exactly what we need today to tackle some of the great social problems we're facing in terms of climate change, inequality, and political and violent conflicts.
You talked about climate change, and I thought that was fascinating because, see if I can recall what you were saying, but what struck me about it was that it requires a little bit of a different kind of empathy. It requires being able to be empathetic with the future in a way, which we don't seem to be able to do. I mean, we're all talking about it, but we're still wasting, polluting, spilling, and doing all the actions in the present that really demonstrate that we haven't connected in to the impact on the future. So would how is empathy a way to do that that might be more effective?
Well, I think of climate change, global warming, as a problem of empathy because we have an enormous amount of scientific knowledge about the effects and causes of global warming, yet we're still failing to take action, as you said.
Yeah.
So why aren't we taking action? I think there's an empathy gap in two different ways. On the one hand, we're failing to empathize across space, and by that I mean empathizing with people in developing countries who are being hit by the impact of climate change right now, today. I mean drought-struck farmers in Kenya. I mean rice farmers in the Indian state of Orissa who are losing their crops and their lives to floods. And we're failing to step into their shoes to really understand what they're going through. On the other hand, we're failing to empathize through time. We're not stepping into the shoes of future generations, as you just mentioned. We don't really sit and think about what it would be like to be a teenager living in Seattle in 2100, or in Shanghai, or in Dublin, or in Budapest. And that failure to really step into the shoes of future generations, make that empathetic leap through time, I think is holding us back from social action. So the question to me is, how do we make that leap? How do we empathize outside the realm of today, but with the future? And so I've been working on some social and cultural projects to try and turn that into a reality.
Mm.
One of the main ones I've been working on is a new kind of museum. So some decades ago, there was the idea that there should be Holocaust museums in all the world's major cities to develop empathy with people from who went through a specific historical event in the past, in the Second World War. Well, I think there should be what I call climate futures museums in all the world's major cities. And those museums are specifically designed to get people to understand what it's like to experience climate change in the future and also across space in developing countries.
This is really interesting because we're trying to use fear right now to do this, and it's not working. You know, I mean, we're trying to use the specter of, you know, global meltdown or whatever you want to call it, and it is not working. And I've had this theme before for me, and it's what's come up. Fear doesn't actually motivate us. Only just a very, very, very short time, you know, for the time that we're panicked until we feel okay again. It sounds to me like what I'm thinking is empathy has a much more not consistent, but a little bit more, a little longer lasting, a little more personal. It isn't just for my help me feel better right now. You know, I just so I don't feel afraid right now. Okay, that's done. I'm sorry, I can go back to my old habits. So it's just an off comment from me, but what a contrast with what you're talking about. So what would be in a museum like that? I'm fascinated to know what a climate futures museum would have.
Well, a climate future, I mean, we're just addressing what you just said there about fear. I think you're absolutely right that you can watch a dozen Hollywood climate change disaster movies and you're going to be entertained, but it may not make you actually do anything or it's going to change you. And also the problem of fear is that there's a rabbit in the headlights syndrome, that you feel fear and then you don't empathy, yeah. I think, has a potentially much deeper effect on us. So I've been working on this climate change museum with some of the leading artists in Britain and in Europe, trying to work out, well, what kind of experiences can we give people and what kind of conversations can we give people to really give them a sense of what climate change is like. So one might, for example, walk into a room which is completely dark, and all you can hear are the voices of people from Kenya or from India or Bangladesh talking about their experiences of being affected by climate change, about the adjustments they have to make, about not knowing when to plant their crops. Some of the very everyday things, that could be one kind of room. There may be other rooms where you go into a cafe. The museum cafe could help you empathize with people who are, for example, growing crops in a country being affected by climate change. And you get you go into the cafe and you find out something about their lives when you buy the product. You might have conversations with young people from who are the future generations, the people of the future, talking to them about how they think and feel about climate change. There's all sorts of ways to try and catapult people into other people's lives, to get them to imagine what it might be like to, you know, be living in 2100. But the two ways that we're trying to use are experience and conversation, because they're the two methods, I think, which really make the most effect on our lives. And of course, in response to fear, we also need to create an image of what communities in the future could look like in our Climate Futures Museum, something more positive, ideas of how we might live more sustainably, live with greater community. And that is also an aspect of trying to imagine the future, put yourself in the future. And hope, of course, creates social action as much as fear does.
Yeah, to increase our ability to use our imagination in that way. You were talking about imagination and empathy earlier. Do you see those as being very connected?
Absolutely. I think empathy, to be an empathist is to be like an actor who can step into the shoes of their stage character and see the world through their eyes and adopt their emotions. Historically, the idea of method acting, which was founded by the Russian director and actor Stanislavski, has been very much about empathy, that you're supposed to try and get into the shoes of your character to sort of train yourself to be them. So one very famous example is the actress Hilary Swank in the film Boys Don't Cry, where she was playing a transgendered man, and before she went before the cameras, she spent several months in New York dressed up as a man, trying to experience what it would be like trying to pass for a man even though she's a woman, and to find that strange space, to experience that space of where people don't quite understand or respond to your gender, and how difficult that can be. She's very eloquent, actually, talking about it. And she's following the method acting school of Dustin Hoffman and Al Pacino and others. Now, of course, acting might make it sound a bit frivolous, but really, I don't think it is. I think we each need to think of ourselves potentially as actors who can step into the lives of all the people around us, the strangers that we don't see, whether it's the merger and acquisition lawyer or the waiter at your favorite restaurant or someone who delivers your post each day. In all those occasions, we can be an actor and give ourselves a new repertoire of stage characters, as it were, and use our imaginations before we take our action.
Does anyone ever respond to you by saying, well, why would I want to do that? It's just going to give me more pain, and I'm going to, it's going to make my life harder. Do you ever get that response?
I get two responses. Well, sometimes I get the response of, well, if I spend all my time stepping into someone else's shoes, aren't I just going to feel all their pain and get all their angst and feel all their miseries? And that can happen on occasion. And psychologists call it empathetic over-arousal. It's something that can actually happen most to people who are, for example, nurses who are working on cancer wards for the terminally ill, that they might have such a strong empathetic response to the people that they're working with that it can take them into depression or make them shut down in other ways. That's an extreme case of over-arousal. And what tends to happen is people raise a mental barrier and kind of get on with their jobs kind of like automatons in some way, so they can sort of survive it. But it's very rare, that kind of overarousal. The much greater problem in society is the empathy deficit, that we don't actually do enough to step into other people's shoes. But the other way of thinking about, well, could we empathize too much or might it take us into misery, is to actually realize that empathy is a way of expanding your life. As you said at the beginning, it's a kind of form of travel. And one of the best examples of this, I think, is the English writer George Orwell, who in the 1920s, he decided to find out what it was really like to live on the margins of British society. He'd been in the colonial police force in British Burma in the early 20s, and when he came back, he was sick of colonialism. He thought it was disgusting. He wanted to understand how working people or people on the margins really lived. So he decided to go and spend some time in the East End of London, in the poorest part of London in the 1920s and early 1930s, dressed up as a tramp. He put on shabby shoes and a shabby coat, and he went out and spent his time with vagabonds and beggars to experience what their lives were really like. Now, in some ways, his experience was traumatic. He recounts it in his fantastic book, Down and Out in Paris and London, which I think is a kind of a Bible for the empathist of the future. He describes what it was like to be a tramp.
Do you have a Bible that's called Down and Out in Paris and London?
Down and Out in Paris and London, a bit of a tongue twister. And it's cheaper than your average Bible, probably. But what he discovered was that empathy actually made his life much more exciting and interesting and adventurous. It developed his moral universe, expanded it, so he was more compassionate towards homeless people, for example. But it also gave him new ideas about friendship, changed his political ideas about authority, gave him fantastic examples and ideas for his literary endeavors. It really was a travel adventure into another world. And after that point, he kept on making those sort of empathetic excursions into people's lives. And so I think today that we ought to follow George Orwell's example and treat empathy as a form of travel, a kind of extreme sport. So you can ask yourself, not, you know, where am I going to travel on my next holiday, but whose shoes am I going to travel, step into next? Whose life can I actually travel into?
That's terrific. For example, we'll take a quick break and then we'll come back to Roman and talk a little bit more about this. This is just really beautiful what you've said, and I want to come back to it. So we'll take a quick break. We're here with Roman Krznarek from London School of Life, and you'll find him on outrospection.org. So that's OUTROspection, outrospection.org, where you can find his blog. And we'll be right back. We've got 20 minutes left. So if you want to call us, we'll play the number over the break, and you can join us in this conversation about empathy. See you in a moment.
Addicted to your negative, stressful thinking, Byron Katie offers a 28-day residential program called Turnaround House. Turnaround House is a groundbreaking program offering you a tool to help you shift your life and balance the mind and body using the work. Turnaround House invites you to break the cycle of suffering and confusion. Please visit thework.com. That's thework.com, or call 1-888-98-KATIE. That's 1-888-98-KATIE. Turnaround House. Come home to peace.
Now is your chance to be part of the show. Call 877-230-3062. Call in with your questions or thoughts and talk with the host and their guest. Again, that number is 877-230-3062.
A new way to handle absolutely everything is now on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/a new way to join the community of friends. Elise is there and loves talking with people about the show topics and how you can use the practices and ideas in your own life. Got a question you couldn't ask live? Elise takes questions before and after the show, adds videos, and posts more info from authors. Come say hello at facebook.com/a new way.
Did you know that you can rate this show on iTunes? The show you're listening to right now. It's true. You can leave your thoughts about the show, the topic, the guest. You can even leave a suggestion. Then, before you leave, rate the show. The hosts love hearing from you, so next time you download this show from iTunes, leave your thoughts and rate the show for the host and for others.
Make it come true.
And welcome back. I'm here with Roman Krasnarek, and we've got a little bit left in the show. So, of course, I encourage you to call. Just before the break, we were – should I give you the number then? Let's do that, 877-230-3062. That's 877-230-3062. And just before the break, we were talking about taking an empathetic excursion and all the reasons why you might want to do that and what you might get out of it, including, you know, I was writing down as you were speaking, Roman, you know, increased creativity and more friendships and more interest in life, you know, a sense of adventure. And I was thinking so often we're really focused on ourselves and, depression and many other of our now prominent and getting more prominent ailments are coming from this just intense self-focus. And I think what you're offering is a way to explore and another person's world and to really get a lot out of that for yourself and for the world, because we were talking about what happens socially when we do that. So what do we want to do in the last bit is talk about how you could start doing that. If you're listening and you're thinking, okay, so what can I do? Let's at least give you one thing to start. Roman, find something that you think sounds good to start with and that people can take on. And then if I get a caller, we'll go to a caller and then we'll see if we can fit one or two people in. Now, it's going to depend on the time, everybody. So call now if you want to be on the show rather than calling at 2 minutes to. Okay, so what could people do?
Well, one thing that people can do is use conversation as a lever into a new empathetic world. Because one way of doing that is through developing your curiosity about strangers. To get out onto the streets and actually start talking to the people who you're walking past every day, the person who works at your, you know, local shop or wherever it happens to be, to try and understand their world, to have a mutual exchange of thoughts and ideas about life that really catapults you into their way of thinking. Because I think we don't do enough of that, having curiosity about strangers. We've lost the curiosity that we all had as children, that desire to find out how another person lives or thinks. We're almost too embarrassed to do it. But I think you can also develop that conversational empathy in family. Tackle your family empathy deficit. When this program finishes, pick up the phone and call your sister who you haven't spoken to for the last couple of years and have a conversation with her, and without trying to butt in and change her mind, try to listen and understand where she's coming from and try to use empathy as a way to bridge the conversational gap and to take your relationship forward. Now, those are only just two simple ideas coming out of empathy through conversation, but of course there are other ways too that we can talk about.
Yeah. I was thinking that here in the States, because I lived in England for a long time, there is a little more. I've definitely noticed the contrast of people will ask you questions. Will ask you questions about your life and get curious, but the types of questions are more like, you know, what do you do and things like that. Is there a way to make that conversation easy and not, we have a lot of superficial conversations, right? What's your job? What do you do? Where do you live? How can it be a little more than that?
I think we have to think about the nature of openings and be more adventurous in the openings. What I mean by that is exactly as you're saying, to not say, hello, how are you? What do you do? You know, where are you from? But to recognize that actually people love talking about their thoughts and their ideas, to try and understand how they view life and death and love, you can have those conversations with people through adventurous openings. So instead of asking your work colleagues, so what did you do this weekend, you can ask them, you know, how did your weekend change you? You could go to the extreme that I often use is asking people what they'd like written on their tombstones. So most people don't have the courage to do that, but I've been cultivating it for a while. And those kind of openings, which might make people think you're a little bit eccentric, will actually make them feel glad for you being a bit more open with them. But the key to this, I think, is being open about yourself as much as you want to discover other people. If you're open about your own emotions and fears and thoughts, then other people will do that too. And that is the beginning of a conversation which will take you into a new empathetic direction where you can step into someone else's shoes, but they can do the same to you, because this is about mutual understanding, not just you being like an investigative journalist delving into somebody else's life and trying to get the story.
Right, just intruding into, let me empathize with you. I can't really think of anything more yucky than sort of like getting intrusive into someone's. Yeah, there's a genuine interest to experience their world in some way will help with that. And if that's not genuine, people will feel it. They'll just feel that you're being silly or intrusive.
So. That's right. And that's, in fact, why there's a second route to empathy apart from conversation, which is experience. But the best way we can actually understand someone's life is through literally stepping into their shoes, doing the actions that they do. And that way you're not prying into their life, you're actually living it. So, for example, just in terms of practical ways of stepping into the moccasins of another person, if you're a person, if you have a particular religious belief, you could on successive weekends go to the churches or the religious places of other religions and try and step into the shoes of people from other religious viewpoints. Equally, if there's a local homelessness project where you live, you know, go and sleep out for on the streets for a night and find out what it's like. If you happen to have a bit of disdain for people who are living on their welfare checks, well, find out how much the welfare check is where you live and try living on it for a month and see how you feel then. Those are the kinds of practical empathetic adventures which are in the tradition of George Orwell. They're in the tradition of radical travel. You know, in the 18th century, travel guides told us to go and visit monuments and art galleries and churches. In the 20th century, they told us to go and lie on beaches or climb volcanoes to see the perfect sunset. I think the travel guides of the 21st century have to be about how we can step into other people's shoes, the practical ways through experience and through conversation where we can know somebody else's life.
That's great. And you're talking about a little bit more about strangers, and I have a caller who'd like to talk about his family, so we can talk about a little more intimate way to get a view on empathy, if you like. Should we take Anthony? Anthony, can we get you live on the show?
Yeah, hi.
Hi, is it Anthony, but it's Anthony, isn't it? Excuse me.
Yeah, it's okay.
That's all right. What's going on?
I have a problem with my brother. I haven't been spending as much time with him as I should, and we got into a big fight because the relationship's never been that good.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me he never wants to talk to me again.
Okay. Yeah, it's painful. I hear that. Have you had a fight with him before that was this bad?
Never this bad. It's just, I'm such a fucking idiot.
Yeah, and well, today we've been talking, and Roman's been talking about empathy, and so, of course, I'm going to take us in that direction, and that may or may not be right for you, Anthony. So if we don't end up being of assistance to you today, then please give your details to my producer. Don't hang up the phone when we take you off air. Give her the details, and I'll give you a call separately, and we'll have a chat, okay? So just in case we don't hit it.
Yeah, but I'm just hating myself right now because I'm just such a fucking schmuck. And
well, I mean, here's the thing, though. You're actually in pain, and I can feel that. And if you had a choice, if you could do it all over again and fix everything with a magic wand, would you want a relationship with your brother? Would you want it to be better?
Of course I would, but I just wish I wasn't such a dickhead, and I just wish I didn't mess it up, you know?
So you think that you're the one who has caused the problem?
well, I'm his older brother, and I really should be the one reaching out to spend time with him, but I was just being such an asshole and not really talking to him.
Yeah, and, you know, Anthony, I don't know anyone who doesn't respond to understanding that, but maybe just not in the moment. So I don't know if being in his shoes will help you here, because it sounds like you can already see from his point of view the pain. That, do you think he's experiencing something similar to you, in even though he's showing probably, it in anger?
He's probably angry at me because I never made an effort. You know, he's just always such an ass jockey.
So. Yeah. I'll tell you a little story. I used to be really angry at my father. But underneath all that anger, I still wanted a relationship with him. I really, really did. And I have that now. So even underneath the worst anger, there is a desire for a relationship. And we just lost Anthony on the phone, unfortunately, because I heard it go. And I can see that he's gone. So, Rebecca, if you get Anthony back on, I'm talking to my producer now, will we get his details? Thanks. Okay, so Roman, have I still got you on the
yep.
line? Great. If you'd like to comment on that, feel free. Otherwise, we're getting close to the end and we'll close. But is that sparked anything for you that you'd like to say? Please do.
Yeah, I couldn't actually hear him very well. It was quite muffled. I'm sorry about that.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fine. I mean, for those of you listening, I think that what this tells me and what Anthony has brought up for me is that, you know, we do feel things, and empathy is a way of feeling things in a deeper way. I mean, Roman, you say in the book, and I'm not going to be able to pull up the quote because I've been flicking through the book and now lost it, but that I think it is that it broadens the range of people we care about and deepens our responses to them. And I just think whenever we can do that and connect with people, not only do we want to be in action to repair our personal relationships, but we like to be in action to fix things that we think are unacceptable to us in the world. Just a personal opinion, but...
Yeah, absolutely. And what it makes me think of is a very important distinction. You were mentioning earlier about how we spend a lot of time focusing on ourselves. And I think that the 20th century was really an age of introspection, where we spent too much time looking at ourselves and being obsessed with our own desires, with our own ambitions, with individualism. And in contrast, I think the 21st century should be not the age of introspection, but the age of outrospection. And by that I mean it should be an age where we discover ourselves by being interested in other people and by caring about other people. And empathy, I see, is the ultimate art form for the age of outrospection. It's an antidote to the excessive individualism and narcissism of the 20th century, and it can take us into a world of caring for others, feeling other people's pain in a way that actually expands our own lives. We need to switch from an introspection to an outrospection, or at least find a little bit of a better balance between the two.
And yeah, I think that's a perfect closing place. We're a couple of minutes to the end, and it gives me a chance to let people know how to find you and how to read more of what you've written and, you know, engage in this conversation with other people as you practice and take the journey, but also to be in conversation with you, because they can come and leave comments and I know the new, what is it? It's the daily Carpe Diem Daily as well, is another way to do some exploration. So let's tell people about that. It's remind me, carpediemdaily.com.
That's right. It's a new website set up by the School of Life, which gives you daily tasks to expand your imagination and expand your life. And you can log on there and you'll be asked maybe to take a photograph of empathy that you see during the day, or to write in some sort of wisdom that you have that leads your life, and to share it with other people. So that's one way of sort of following some of the work I'm doing. People can also go to my blog, Outrospection, which is intended to be a forum for discussion about empathy and the way it can change your life. So I encourage people to go there and leave comments.
And that brings us to the end. I invite you to go as well and meet Roman on outrospection.org. Next week, I'm here with Michael Neal, and we will talk about saying goodbye to your money worries. No more money fear. And I look forward to being with you then. Roman, thank you so much for being here. It's been such a pleasure to read your book. Look for Roman's book, Other People's Shoes, later in the year. If you're signed for my newsletter or you're following on Facebook, I will make sure that you all know about that when it's coming. So go to elisecoit.com and you can get the archives to this show and other shows there as well. Roman Krznarek, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you.
It's been a great pleasure to be on the show.
All right. I look forward to next time. Bye-bye. And bye, everyone. See you next week with Michael.
You've been listening to A New Way to Handle Absolutely Everything with your host, Elise Coit, speaking to the most powerful teachers in the world, Byron Katie, Guy Finley, Debbie Ford, Barbara Scher, Michael Neal, all sharing their wisdom and experience just for you, plus books and CD giveaways. Elise wants you to know, no matter what life throws at you, you can handle it. See how. Fridays at 10 a.m. Pacific for A New Way to Handle Absolutely Everything.
I'm not making plans for tomorrow. Let's live for tonight. I know I want you, baby. So hold me so tight.